your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Got a lot to cover this week. We're going to start off with some impromptu press conference that President Trump was explaining about his conversation with Putin. They had a conversation about an hour. Anyway, this is what President Trump had to say about that. Here we go now.
To news now, White House. President Trump speaking to the media.
Yeah, to get humanitarian assistance to Venezuela.
Yeah, I had a very good talk with President Putin, probably over an hour. And we talked about many things. Venezuela was one of the topics. And he is not looking at all to get involved in Venezuela, other than he'd like to see something positive happen for Venezuela. And I feel the same way. We want to get some humanitarian aid. Right now, people are starving. They have no water. They have no food. Mr. Prime Minister, one of the richest countries in the world 20 years ago, and now they don't have food and they don't have water for their people. So we want to help on a humanitarian basis. And I thought it was a very positive conversation I had with President Putin on Venezuela.
Did you address the election meddling issue?
START treaty or adding China to it, or what exactly?
We're talking about a nuclear agreement where we make less and they make less, and maybe even where we get rid of some of the tremendous firepower that we have right now. We're spending billions of dollars on nuclear weapons, numbers like we've never spent before. We need that, but, and they are also, and China is frankly also, we discussed the possibility of a three-way deal instead of a two-way deal. And China, I've already spoken to them, they very much would like to be a part of that deal. In fact, during the trade talks, we started talking about that. They were excited about that, maybe even more excited than about trade. But they felt very strongly about it. So I think we're going to probably start up something very shortly between Russia and ourselves, maybe to start off. And I think China will be added down the road. We'll be talking about non-proliferation. We'll be talking about a nuclear deal of some kind. And I think it'll be a very comprehensive one.
Mr. President, did you address the election meddling issues that came up in the Mueller report with Mr. Putin today?
We discussed it. He actually sort of smiled when he said something to the effect that it started off as a mountain and it ended up being a mouse. But he knew that because he knew there was no collusion whatsoever. So pretty much that's what it was. It started off.
Did you tell him not to meddle in the next election?
Excuse me. I'm answering this question. You are very rude. So we had a good conversation about many different things. Okay?
Did you ask him not to meddle in the next election?
We didn't discuss that. Really, we didn't discuss it. We discussed five or six things. We also we went into great detail on various things, especially, I would say, the nuclear, especially maybe Venezuela. We talked about North Korea at great length, and pretty much that's it. We also discussed trade. We intend to do a lot of trade with Russia. We do some right now. It's up a little bit. But he'd like to do trade, and we'd like to do trade. And getting along with Russia and China, getting along with all of them is a very good thing. Not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's a positive thing. Getting along with other countries, including your country, by the way. But getting along with countries is a good thing. And we want to have good relationships with every country.
Mr. President, should Mueller testify?
testify? I don't know. That's up to our Attorney General, who I think has done a fantastic job.
And why shouldn't Congress
yeah, go ahead.
Right
yes, please. Well, I'd like to. I know people from Slovakia, and they're incredible people. I would love to. It's a beautiful country, and it's doing very well. It's doing very well. Yeah. Yeah, please. Well, the tariffs have been a necessary thing for me to do because, in the case of the European Union, they have not treated us right. We're losing $181 billion a year. We have been for many years. And the European Union has not treated us properly. But we'll see what happens with regard to tariffs on cars with the European Union. We haven't made a decision on that.
Mr. President, are you going to nominate the Defense Secretary, Shanahan? Are you going to make it official?
It'll be discussed next week.
Mr. President, World Health Freedom Day, can you say anything? We've heard a lot about your reasons
about... Say it again.
World Health Freedom Day, we've heard a lot about your reasons about us.
Well, I think I have a very good relationship with some of the press, and unfortunately, some of the press doesn't cover me accurately. In fact, they go out of their way to cover me inaccurately, so I don't think that's a free press. I think that's a dishonest press, and I want to see a free press. I mean, today I was happy to see on the front page of the New York Times for the first time where they were talking about spying, and they were talking about spying on my campaign. That's a big difference between the way they've been covering, but that's a big story. That's a story bigger than Watergate, as far as I'm concerned. So I want to see freedom of the press, and I get treated fairly by some press, but I get treated very unfairly by other press, and frankly, I think that's very dishonest, and I don't consider that. When you have stories that are purposely written badly, in many cases, very much on purpose. I mean, you look at it. That's not free press. That's the opposite of free press.
Mr. President, do you decide whether you'll invoke the executive privilege as it relates to nominating?
That'll all be determined over the next week or so.
But
you know, I will say this. There's been no president in history that has given what I've given in terms of looking at just a total witch hunt. I call it the Russian hoax. It turned out to be no collusion, no obstruction. It was a total hoax. And yet I was transparent. We gave 1.4 million documents. We gave hundreds of people. I let him interview the lawyer, the White House lawyer, for 30 hours. Think of that, 30 hours. I let him interview other people. I didn't have to let him interview anybody. I didn't have to give any documents. I was totally transparent because I knew I did nothing wrong. It turned out I did nothing wrong. No collusion with Russia. Think of it. $35 million they spent, they wasted over a period of 2 years. No collusion, no obstruction. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'll be running on the economy.
Thank you. Thank you.
And always, folks, we show you these in full, these Oval Office meetings and remarks. President Trump speaking on the, quote, witch hunt and Mueller report to Putin earlier today.
Here's Clapper, you know, ex-intelligence chief, saying some derogatory things about this conversation that Trump had with Putin. I don't think that Putin... that actually Trump should have been talking to Putin at this time. But anyway, here's what Clapper had to say right now.
This morning on the breaking news, President Trump's first phone call with Russian President Vladimir Putin since the release of the Mueller report. The president says they did not, repeat, not discuss Russian meddling in the U.S. elections during the hour-long call. The former director of national intelligence, James Clapper, is here in the Situation Room with us. He's a CNN national security analyst. General Clapper, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks, Wolf.
All right, here's a clip from what the president said today. Listen to this.
Mr. President, did you address the election meddling issues that came up in the Mueller report with Mr. Putin today?
We discussed it. He actually sort of smiled when he said something to the effect that it started off as a mountain and it ended up being a mouse. But he knew that because he knew there was no collusion whatsoever.
Did you ask him not to meddle in the next election?
We didn't discuss that. Really, we didn't discuss it.
Is the president emboldening Russia by having a one-hour phone conversation with Putin and then telling all of us he didn't even discuss Russian meddling in the 2016 election and the threat that it's going to do the same in the 2020 election?
Well, I think, yes, he is. I think both leaders, both President Putin and President Trump, are in a state of denial for different reasons. In Putin's case, obviously, deny that there was any meddling at all. And in the case of President Trump, acknowledging there was meddling, cast doubt on the legitimacy of his election. And it is bad because it marginalizes what happened, as well documented, exhaustively documented in the Mueller report. It marginalizes that in the minds of the American voter, American people. And it emboldens the Russians to keep doing what they've been doing.
Because the phone conversation lasted more than an hour. How valuable is that omission by the president to a former KGB agent like Vladimir Putin?
First of all, just editorial note, it was probably substantially only a half hour because you have to allow, cut it in half for translations.
Yeah, but even a half an hour is a long conversation.
Well, it is. But I just wouldn't want to exaggerate that. And, it's just not good to not to have brought that up, particularly in the face of the evidence. I mean, it would have been nice to at least go through the motions of asking to extradite the Russians that were indicted in the two key indictments that Mueller put out in February and July of last year against the IRA, the Internet Research Agency, the St. Petersburg Troll Farm, and the 12 GRU officers in last July. And he didn't even mention that. So,
But
it's not surprising.
You served, for some 50 years in the U.S. military, the intelligence service. You've seen a lot, the Cold War. How worried are you about this threat from Russia right now?
I am very concerned about it. And what concerns me is we don't focus on that enough. We're all hung up about collusion or obstruction or the absence thereof. And the big deal here in my mind and the big concern I've had from the get-go has been the threat posed by the Russians, which is profound, and it's going to continue. We're going to see it again in 2020.
He also seemed to be taking Russia's position on Venezuela in contradiction to what his own national security team is saying. Listen to this.
He is not looking at all to get involved in Venezuela.
Are the Russians responsible now for what's going on?
We've made clear all along, Wolf, that Maduro is surrounded by Cubans and has been supported by Russians there in Venezuela. And we've told the Russians and we've told the Cubans that's unacceptable.
President says that Putin is not looking at all to get involved in Venezuela. But a couple days ago, the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, specifically told me that the reason Maduro of Venezuela didn't leave, there was a plane on the tarmac, was because the Russians told him not to leave.
Well, this is another classic case of not believing anything that Vladimir Putin says, who, by the way, is a winner in all this. And I think I would go with Secretary Pompeo's analysis. The Russians have on and off had a long interest in Venezuela or any place in the Western Hemisphere they can gain a foothold. If it isn't Cuba, it's Venezuela. So, and by the way, I'm not sure I understand exactly what dog we have in this hunt, it's particularly when we're speaking about military options. Well, options to do what?
Well, the president keeps saying all options are on the table. But his national security advisors, like John Bolton, keep suggesting that military option, and Pompeo also suggesting that's a very real option for the U.S.
Well, I understand that. I'm just not sure I understand what is the military option. What would be the objective of military intervention in Venezuela? And I hope people remember history because sometimes those don't turn out so well.
The president today praised the New York Times for a front page story, as he notes, that there was an undercover FBI investigator who met with a Trump campaign official, George Papadopoulos. The president views this as spying. The attorney general says this is being looked at. Do you think the Justice Department Inspector General will find anything inappropriate on the part of the FBI or the U.S. intelligence community as far as this is concerned?
Well, I don't know, but I will say that using undercover agents is a standard and legitimate technique that is widely used in investigations. That technique has been used to thwart a lot of counterterrorism plots in this country. So I'm sure, I mean, there are protocols and standards for using an agent, and I'm sure that's the case here.
So you're saying this was not done lightly?
Well, no, it's never done lightly.
Was it spying?
Well, I guess it meets the dictionary definition of surveillance or spying, a term I don't particularly like. It's not a term of art used by intelligence people. It has a negative connotation of a rogue operation, out of control, not in compliance with the law, and that's not the case at all.
General Clapper, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Wolf.
This is the Clapper fella that was caught lying to Congress about surveillance by the NSA of American citizens. Well, he concludes his interview here with he doesn't think that the spying or the surveillance of Trump or anything else was illegal. But it's been proven time and time again now by Sarah Carter and John Solomon and Greg Jared and his research and others that there was spying going on during Trump's campaign and after he became president to dislodge him. So it was a soft coup going on. So we're going to get to what this Omar lady said, representative, said about Venezuela. Here we go with her right now.
A lot of the policies that we have put in place has kind of helped lead the devastation in Venezuela. And we've sort of set the stage for where we are arriving today. This particular bullying and the use of sanctions to eventually intervene and make regime change really does not help the people of countries like Venezuela, and it certainly does not help, and it's not in the interest of the United States.
That's her take. The Trump administration fires back at Ilhan Omar, the congresswoman, for suggesting that the United States is at least partly to blame for the crisis that's unfolding in Venezuela. Here is the vice president, Mike Pence.
The congresswoman doesn't know what she's talking about. Nicolas Maduro is a socialist dictator who's taken what was once one of the most prosperous nations in this hemisphere and brought it literally to a level of deprivation and oppression and poverty that we have never seen.
Well, that was some statement by our vice president. Next is what Pompeo, our Secretary of State, had to say about Omar's remarks. Here we go now.
Venezuela was once a thriving, prosperous country, but under socialist leaders like Hugo Chavez and now Nicolas Maduro, the government's seizure of companies meant that when their main resource, oil, saw volatility, well, the economy collapsed. Now nearly 9 in 10 Venezuelans live in poverty. Food is so scarce, reports say that some have been forced to eat pigeons and cats they find in the street. Now, Maduro has only tightened his grip, imprisoning political opponents, and all of this leading to violent clashes. And the global community, including the U.S., has lined up behind opposition leader Juan Guaido. Now, despite all that, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar is, well, you guessed it, blaming us.
A lot of the policies that we have put in place has kind of helped lead the devastation in Venezuela. And we've sort of set the stage for where we are arriving today. This particular bullying and the use of sanctions.
Here now, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Mr. Secretary, thank you for being with us tonight. Now, when you hear a member of the House of Representatives put the blame squarely on the, quote, bullies in the United States, what we're seeing tonight in Venezuela, what's your reaction?
So the nicest thing I could say is it's unbelievable ignorance. It's just factually wrong. You hit it in your opening, Laura. The problems in Venezuela have been years in the making. It's been a socialist regime, first with Chavez, now with Maduro. The destruction of a net wealthy nation, the nation with more oil reserves than any other country in the world.
Beautiful country,
and a
too.
Beautiful country with beautiful real estate, beautiful shorelines, all kinds of opportunity for a member of Congress, who, frankly, one who sits on an important national security committee, to make a statement blaming America First in this way. It's not only ignorant, it's disgusting.
What can you tell us tonight? Still not a successful transition in Venezuela. Guaido was the guy that the world community chose. Why is he the right one at the right time?
So the world community has certainly supported him, but the Venezuelan people chose him through their National Assembly and through their constitutional process. The military didn't fracture in the way that we would hoped, but it's just a matter of time. It's the case that Maduro may rule for a little while longer, but he's not going to govern. Structurally, there's no way he stays in power. It's time for him to leave, and we need the Cubans and the Russians to follow him out the door.
Now, to Americans who say, look, we have a problem at our southern border. We've got 100,000 people a month being apprehended and released into the country. Why are we focusing at all on Venezuela? What do you say to them?
So we can do more than one thing at a time. We have an obligation to secure our southern border. But we've had 3 million people, 3 million migrants leave Venezuela, too. They will end up somewhere today. They're in Colombia, Chile, Peru. We have an important responsibility in Venezuela. First, we want to support democracy in South America. It's important for our vital national security interests. But it's also the case when we see humanitarian crises like this, the American people understand that taking food and providing humanitarian support is something that's in our nature.
I want to move on to another topic, which is China, something that you've been addressing lately. I've been talking about this for 20 years, but Joe Biden doesn't seem to think China is a big threat. Let's watch.
China is going to eat our lunch? Come on, man. They can't even figure out how to deal with the fact that they have this great division between the China Sea and the mountains in the east. I mean, in the west. I mean, they're not bad folks, but guess what? They're not competition for us.
I don't even know. I don't personally know what to say about that, but China, not a threat to the United States. What is the truth there?
President Trump and our administration has taken the threat from China very, very seriously, very different from what we just heard there.
They want it. He's leading in the polls.
We understand the threat. There's a trade imbalance that President Trump has taken on to try and get fair and reciprocal trade between the United States and China. The fact that the Chinese are working to put their systems in networks all across the world so they can steal your information and my information.
How about an American university?
And American universities to feed this information back into their system. You've talked about this. We've talked about a million of their ethnic minorities being held in re-education camps in Jiangxing. This is stuff that is reminiscent of the 1930s. They present a real challenge to the United States, and this administration is prepared to take this on.
American high-tech companies in China, there's a lot of concern that there has been, I guess, inadvertent assistance to the communist regime there as they seek to dominate part of their Belt and Road Initiative, dominate every major industry, including space and weaponry, artificial intelligence. What can you tell us about the concerns about American big tech going to China, setting up shop?
We've talked about this, and we've gone out to talk to each of these businesses. Laura, it's true. I think America was slow to recognize this challenge. The previous administration, the Obama administration, just didn't want to touch it. The first step is to make these businesses aware. This is what this technology is being used for. Here's who you're selling it to. The separation between private companies and government doesn't exist there, not remotely like we have in the United States. And so we've made clear to them that their technology is being used in ways that they may not be aware of. And the impact, not only the impact it has for American national security, but the impact it will have on their business and the business's reputation is very real.
And, Mr. Secretary, I also want to get your reaction to something one of your predecessors said last night on MSNBC. Watch.
Why should Russia have all the fun? And since Russia is clearly backing Republicans, why don't we ask China to back us? Not only that, China, if you're listening, why don't you get Trump's tax returns? Let's have a great power contest, and let's get the Chinese in on the side of somebody else.
Leading Democrat, she was on for an hour last night, the great power contest, asking China to dump the tax returns.
So there is a great power contest taking place. I think that's true. I only wish when she was Secretary of State she would have taken it on instead of allowing it to get where it is today and turning a willful blind eye to that. We're taking this seriously. I hadn't heard those comments before. They don't remotely sound like what ought to be done by America, and they're certainly not what President Trump and this administration is going to do to make sure we keep America safe, that we recognize China is a 1.5 billion people. There will be commerce between the two countries, but we've got to make sure that America is prepared so that we can continue to be the world's leading power 10, 20, 50 years from now.
Are you having more fun now than you were as CIA director? I was thinking about that. If I could choose between one or the other, like what's more fun?
They're very different jobs. I've enjoyed them both.
Oh, what a diplomat. Mr. Secretary, thanks for being here tonight. Really appreciate it.
Next, I'm going to discuss a little bit about quite a report. It's going to be placed up on our site. Anyway, this is George Butler with the SecretTruth.com program, and we're going to be putting a PDF file up, and it's just a tremendous PDF file in the sense that it's by Insight Crime, Investigation Analysis of Organized Crime. The title is Venezuela, a Mafia State, and then it states Venezuela has become a hub of organized crime in the region. And it talks about Cartel of the Suns, okay, and how that had been, you could say, embedded in. And here's what it says that's happened down there in Venezuela. But let me I forget something. Hugo Chavez, when he first ran for president, for the presidency in Venezuela, received $1.5 million from BBVA Bank in Spain in 1998 and 1999. So that started him off with receiving bankers' money. Now, let me tell you what goes on at these banks and these drug cartels. The drug cartels are generating so much cash and so forth, they have to find these crooked banks to wash those funds through. So this is why the bankers and the drug traffickers are in bed with each other. We're talking about international. Now, let's get back to Venezuela. Drug traffickers there, I'm quoting directly from this PDF file and so forth. Drug traffickers have long sought to penetrate the state to facilitate business and, if possible, put resources of the state at their disposal. But sometimes corrupt state actors decide that turning a blind eye to drug trafficking in return for payoffs is not enough, and that direct participation is warranted. This is what has happened in Venezuela, and we call drug trafficking elements within the Venezuelan regime the Cartel of the Suns. The term Cartel of the Suns, Cartel de los Soles, came from the Golden Stars at generals in the Venezuelan National Guard wear on their epaulets. The term was first used in 1993 when two National Guard generals, anti-drugs chief Raymond Davila and his successor, Orlando de Vegas, were investigated for drug trafficking. Today, the name is used to describe all government officials involved in the drug trade, and there are many stretching across all organs of the state. And then this, we'll have this up on our site where you can go through it and so forth and really get an idea of what's going on down there. And what's going on down there has been institutionalized into the government, see. And that, and the, in the military, see, we have, also a section on here has armed groups operating in Venezuela. And, this will, here's just roughly, six general groups. Colectivos. These are armed civilian groups similar to paramilitaries, alleged ideologically ties to the government. They perform public safety, intelligence, and repression functions in conjunction with government security forces. They control food sales in some areas. The Pranas. A pran is an incarcerated gang member who directs criminal organizations on the outside called trinas from inside the prison. The term has recently expanded to include people in control of criminal activity in the neighborhoods and gold mines in certain regions of the country. Paramilitarias or parascos. Paramilitary groups, number three here, such as the Arabanos and Rastratos that emerged along the border with Colombia. That's just another group. We have former Colombian guerrilla groups operating ELN and FARC dissidents in Venezuela territory, primarily in border state. They're involved in drug trafficking, extortion, kidnapping, and contraband. Next, we have mega bandas, criminal groups involved in kidnapping, extortion, drug dealing, car theft, and other crimes. They possess high caliber weapons and operate throughout the countries. And the sixth group would be the Venezuelan Armed Forces, consist of the Army, National Guard, Navy, Air Force, and National Militia. While they are not criminal groups, many are involved in criminal activities. But Cartel of the Suns is a group of men, and they're very powerful, and they are systematically dominating drug trafficking in Venezuela now. And this is what we're not being told down there, is that not only under Hugo Chavez, but also under Maduro, the president, they have expanded their drug operations to a very large area. And so this is what we're talking about now. Now we're going to be playing next sort of an update about what's going on down there. And what we're going to be covering is a report about today's demonstration down there. Here we go right now.
One key group, the military. And right now we're seeing the opposition out in force, their numbers building again today, another Saturday protest. And their goal is to go to military bases and try and convince especially the rank and file soldiers to join them in their efforts to oust the disputed president here, Nicolas Maduro. As for Maduro himself, he is also trying to show himself with the military as often as possible on state TV and meetings, really day in and day out. Today he was at a cadet base, shaking hands with the cadets, giving them fist bumps, and shouting back and forth, "Loyalty forever." He's trying to show both those cadets and the people watching state TV that the army is still solidly with him. He's called the failed uprising on Tuesday an attempted coup that has been organized by the U.S. Here's Maduro.
We say to the traitors, to the coup-making oligarchy, to imperialism, the slogan that marks this historical time, let it be heard even in Washington, loyal forever.
So far, at least twice this week, these protests have turned violent. More than 200 people wounded, several people dead. They're really squaring off against each other. Maduro has begun to arrest those who he says are responsible for the failed uprising, but he has not yet dared to arrest Juan Guaido, the man U.S. recognizes as the president of Venezuela. Back to you.
I just don't think you can talk someone on getting onto a plane that's headed to Cuba. I think that's what Pompeo was saying. I don't get that at all. And Guaido is going to be up against a really, really strong military. They have all kinds of different illegal criminal type of groups down there. So I just don't see what's going to happen in a positive vein for us. Okay, coming up next, there's an article, interview with Richard Hedges, and he destroys Rachel Maddow during this interview. But here we go with Richard Hedges.
I want to share with you a list of the people, all of them highly respected journalists, writers, and thinkers, who have been saying for months now that the Russiagate investigation and the fascination, if not the downright obsession of it by the U.S. corporate media elites, is maybe overstated, if not possibly even irresponsible. Matt Taibbi, Glenn Greenwald, Noam Chomsky this weekend, Chris Hedges, Aaron Matei, have all said as much. All of them, look, whether you like what they write or what they say or not, are highly respected intellectuals with reputations as diggers, as truth tellers. And all of them are now describing in detail how many media elites in places like CNN and MSNBC have damaged our profession of journalism by running with this Mueller story before the facts were in. Chris Hedges, this weekend on his show On Contact, while interviewing Aaron Matei, went as far as comparing the coverage of the Mueller investigation to the coverage of the run-up to the war in Iraq. By the way, if you didn't get a chance to see the show, I'm sure you will. Everybody's watching it. Here's a clip of what Matei says people like Rachel Maddow did by focusing only on Mueller and what they failed to cover in the process.
As you're channeling all this energy into a conspiracy theory and an attempt to prove it, you're diverting the prospects of building a real resistance, of organizing around issues that impact real people's lives. I mean, you know, the most striking illustration to me is that there were bigger protests over the firing of Jeff Sessions by liberals than there were over the tax cuts. So the biggest upward transfer of wealth in U.S. Yeah. history, basically robbing from lower income people right. to get to the rich.
Think about that. That's saying a lot, right? The interview here on RT was so popular, by the way, and seen by so many people that it was recommended by YouTube for people searching for, you know, good, reliable, real information about the Mueller probe. By the way, as you probably know, because this newscast often leads the pack, this network, RT, is one of the preferred sources for information for people all over the world when they're looking for information about stories. Well,
Guess who that is not sitting well with? Interestingly enough, Rachel Maddow was so bothered. She's a host at MSNBC. She was so bothered by this YouTube recommendation of RT that she tweeted her anger, calling the recommendation by a reputable group called Death by Algorithm. By the way, Maddow's ratings have been just about cut in half since the Mueller report came out, in case you didn't know. We don't know if that factors in or not. She is hemorrhaging viewers. Joining us now is the host of On Contact, the show that, I guess, got Maddow's dander up. Chris, thanks, as usual, for joining us. And what do you make of this?
Well, you know, the most of the mainstream media, although Rachel Maddow is kind of the poster child for this conspiracy theory, is so invested in this narrative that they are spinning as quickly as they can to salvage their credibility, including, of course, the New York Times. And so that's what this is about. They have tried to conflate obstruction of justice with collusion. They have, you know, posited the idea that there's a conspiracy to hide the conspiracy. I mean, it reminds me very much of what happened after it was clear that there are no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And I was the former Middle East bureau chief of the New York Times, so was very outspoken about the call to invade Iraq. You saw the same kind of process. But I think that this blow is severe and maybe even fatal. I think it's the worst, perhaps one of the most destructive elements to hit the press since the inception of the war in Iraq and the cheerleading that the press did. And so you're watching this kind of furious effort. I mean, it becomes more and more pathetic, but this effort on the part of those who sold us this fantasy for over 2 years to try and salvage their credibility, which has become immensely tarnished.
How do you feel about the accusation? Because in some sense, I think she's saying, and maybe I should ask you flat out, are you or is anyone on your staff colluding with YouTube to increase the numbers of On Contact so you'll have better YouTube statistics than anybody else, as far as you know?
Well, no, it's the opposite, Rick. I mean, we know after the Proper Not anonymous website that accused left-wing entities and, of course, RT of disseminating foreign propaganda, that there were algorithms put in place by YouTube, Google, Twitter that have diverted readers and viewers away from the content. So we have this article in the Washington Post which claims that hundreds of thousands of people were directed towards the show. I mean, I just checked it before we went on the air. I think it has 70,000 views, which is good for my show, but in the world of YouTube and the digital universe is a pretty small number.
You do great numbers, though, over time because people keep checking on you. But here's what's interesting about her criticism. She's criticizing you, Chris Hedges, a Pulitzer Prize winner. She's criticizing Aaron Matei. She's criticizing Glenn Greenwald. She's criticizing Noam Chomsky. She's criticizing Matt Taibbi. She's criticizing people who, generally speaking, I never see her sit down and challenge about their assertions or their facts. Seems hypocritical.
Well, she's not in the business of news. She's in the business of entertainment, and she spins conspiracy theories for the left the way Sean Hannity spins conspiracy theories for the right. They engage in the same kind of fear-mongering and the same kind of, I would call it, you know, info entertainment that is not in any way tied to fact or even verifiable reality. You know, the kinds of stuff she was doing, you know, for instance, during a cold snap, claiming that Russia was going to cut off all the heating oil. I mean, you know, it was endless
laughable
garbage like this. Well, yeah, it is laughable, but Sean Hannity does it. But it frightens people. It keeps them on the edge of their seat. They come to believe that Mueller is about to storm into the White House and drag Trump out in handcuffs. And it's it functions to keep viewers glued to the set. But as you said, of course, now I think her credibility is largely in tatters.
Yeah.
That, by the way, will not in any way affect her position. I speak again as a critic of the Iraq war. All of those people who were wrong are still there, and those of us who called it right got pushed out into the wilderness. Same will happen with this.
One minute left. Let me address the question that you asked Matei and the answer that he essentially gave you, which goes less to the point about the fact that they overplayed the Mueller hand and more to the fact that in so doing, they missed a lot of really important news that the American people should have known about.
Right. Rick, that's the tragedy. That's the key point. There was so much that the press should have been reporting on, and they didn't. The destruction of governmental agencies like the Department of Education or the EPA, the constant disregard for the rule of law, on and on and on, the stacking of the courts with these far-right judges. I mean, there was so much damage being done, and it was all centered around the tweets and Russiagate.
It's a good stuff. If you guys haven't seen it, you can catch it on YouTube or you can catch it right here on RT. Chris Hedges, as usual, my friend, thank you for taking time to join us to talk about this.
Just want to say something about Richard Hedges' comments about putting Rachel Maddow and Sean Hannity in the same, boat. He's saying something like there's conspiracy theories by Rachel Maddow and then on the left and then Sean Hannity on the right. This is where Richard Hedges loses it for me. I've played this clip primarily because Rachel Maddow is becoming known now widely that she's just, putting crap out there. So anyway, I want to just put that out there. But also, this is an example of very, very sharp propagandizing by RT. Now let me tell you about RT. It's Russia Today, okay? But also Ruply, RUPTLY, is a uplink service of live web streaming, video web streaming, you could say, that's financed by RT, and they go into Charlottesville and they do all of these things. They're not going to help us bring America together. So they're very divisive. And one of the other things that I stumbled onto with Ruply, but I will say this about Ruply. Go into Ruply, RUPTLY, on YouTube, because they do have some video that you're going to see from behind the scenes of the protesters or behind the police lines, and they go back and forth sometimes. But they do put out a lot of live video on the demonstrations, which is very helpful in analyzing what's going on. But also, they did, I look at some Ruply today, of the French. The yellow vest stuff is still going on. It's in its 25th week in Paris. And so that's something to keep in mind. But also, there's another live streaming service out of Berlin called Redfish. Okay? And if you go in there to Redfish and go in there and look at their Facebook page, okay? They have a video in there. And here's what they say on their video, the little proviso, the little motto. They say, whether 1919 or 2019, workers everywhere are still on the streets fighting for their rights. So it's Redfish is a very devout, virulent communist group. But all of these groups are being used to bring about a transformation of the world to a world communist state. And so that's really what we're up against. But they have these people, these young idealistic people. They put them on Redfish and they say things. But Redfish has bureaus all over the world too. And it's being financed by the Russians, much like Ruply. But it's just sort of an ancillary, smaller bureau of live streaming. But go in there and check out Redfish. And all those people there, some of the leaders of Redfish were with the Iranians and the Russians and so forth in Syria. But some of what they're saying about some of these false flags is right. So you can't ignore them totally. But I'm just going to tell you about that Redfish is there. Now, the North Koreans fired some new missiles after threatening statements. So this is where Trump is not that well up to date on foreign affairs. He gets pulled in. He phones Putin. He's talking about missiles now. Now we got to bring up the missiles on, on North Korea, see, as a problem and so forth. So, I mean, it goes on, and it's not that easy sometimes to decipher exactly what's going on. There is a bit of good positive news. Lee Ann McAdoo, that's been with Alex Jones in the past, has just recently rejoined his broadcast, Infowars.com, and she is a really jewel. She got to be called Wonder Woman because she sort of had that look, you know, that beautiful look, you know. But she's very smart, and she's very well-spoken, and she has a mind like a steel trap, you know what I mean? She knows what's going on out there, but she presents it in a very, very smooth presentation, manner. And this is where I really like what she's doing, and it's very, very entertaining to get her reporting, listen to her reporting. The Gaza flares again, okay? The Israelis are bombing Gaza again. There's a Boeing 737 slid into a Florida river, okay? We have Maduro calls on Army to be ready. A Department of Defense studying military options for Venezuela. Are you kidding me? We're way late on Venezuela and trying to move in there. We should have moved in there before now, as far as in my opinion, you know what I mean? And we're just late sometimes. And even in Syria, Trump didn't catch on to some of these gas attacks and stuff. He go in there and bomb Syria, you know, Damascus and stuff. So he's not that sharp on certain things that he needs to be on top of. And as a result, then, you know what I mean? It leaves us a lot to be desired. Just summarizing what we had going on tonight, we're Venezuela is a big problem. We need to get our hands on there. We need to get better organized with Venezuela. It has evolved into a narco terrorist state, and it was much better. I mean, even under Western management and dominance of the Western oil companies, the Venezuelans were better off. They had more freedom. They had more freedom of speech and movement. They had a better standard of living. The inflation rate is into the 1.345 million. I mean, it's just all out of sight. It's the worst, most inflated currency in the world. And you just can't live there. They're running out of food, and they're running out of water now over there. And, the mismanagement started under Hugo Chavez. They loaded up the government, started giving away the treasury. So what you had later, Maduro came along, and they just kept looting the country. The country has been looted, you could say. And then they got in bed with all these narco, terrorist people. And, it had just been a distribution point, for narcotics and stuff all over the general area. So what are we going to do now? The Russians moved in. There's information. The Chinese have a foothold also, but also way before that, Hugo Chavez started consolidating his military with Cubans. I mean, there are Cuban people in there in the military. I mean, whole brigades or whatever of top-notch Cuban troops, well-armed, well-trained. And that's the saving grace for Maduro if he has major conflict with it, as these demonstrations get more and more violent, and that's where they're headed. Then he's going to start pulling in some of these Cuban troops and just suppress the violence and the demonstrators. There was a report that we aired just minutes ago that said that Maduro is beginning to crack down and arresting some of the opposition. See, Guaido has not been arrested yet. There's information that he has special protection under American, umbrella. So I don't know exactly what that means, but we're seeing a deteriorating situation there. In this country, we still can't ignore the border problem. We have an influx. They're overwhelming the border. We've got to get more facilities to house them in so that we can send them back when they're deported back. Otherwise, they're being released at bus stations and stuff. So that's gonna make it. You know, that is really a major problem. So we've got to get, get that together. Otherwise, the economy this week has been surprisingly hundreds of thousands, over 200,000 new jobs created. The unemployment rate went down to 3 point something. But I mean, there are a lot of people have left the job market, but there are indications that they're bringing some of those people back into the job market. And here's a short interview with President Trump's economic advisor. Here we go right now.
Now with some real answers, we're joined exclusively by Larry Kudlow, White House Chief Economic Advisor. Larry, congrats on these huge jobs numbers. Like, I've known you for, I don't know, 25 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I ever thought we'd sit here on a day like night like tonight with 3.6% unemployment numbers. I mean, this is... It blows away our former boss Ronald Reagan's numbers, if you ask me.
Well, I don't know that I go that far, but I will say
Larry Kudlow says Trump's recovery not as good as Reagan.
No, I don't want to say that either. What I'll say is this: all these blowout numbers, get to the stats in a moment, but look, President Trump's policies to rebuild the economy have put us into a powerful prosperity boom, and there is no end in sight. Let's not make this any harder than it needs to be. Low tax rates, regulatory rollback, energy openings, trade reforms, growth, 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 growth. That's what you got going here. And these blowout numbers, okay, it's actually been about a fortnight. It started with 3.2% GDP, which no one believed possible. Okay, today, 263,000 jobs beat the street estimates by about 70,000. It's 3.6% unemployment. I was graduating from college in late 1969, the last time we had 3.6. That's a long time
Larry,
ago.
Larry, the tight labor market, I know there are a lot of business people out there who don't like tight labor markets because that means wages are going up. We have a tight labor market, and I was reading today in the journal that Rockwell Corporation, they actually have to, they're training veterans, American veterans,
fabulous,
to do the jobs that need to be done. Right. Bringing in foreign workers, I know there's a big push to bring in foreign workers. You don't need to be bringing in foreign workers. We still have a lot of people on the sidelines who are now coming back into the economy. I love that story today.
So here's a great part of the story. One of the other blowout numbers the other day was the productivity output per hour. How efficient are we? Soaring to 2.4%. Now, to your point, which is really good, we have a lot of people, the estimates vary. There may be 25 million Americans who had left the labor force altogether.
Demoralized.
Because they were discouraged and demoralized. They are coming back. They're coming back because the wage rates are moving above 3%. They're coming back because their friends and neighbors are going back to work. And they're coming back because these companies need them. And if you're not totally qualified, they will retrain you. As my colleague Ivanka Trump puts it, they will reskill you. You can learn this stuff. You don't.
She's really pushing that, and I'm really glad she is. She's pushing that. She was kind of like dismissed out of her efforts early on. Look at what we're seeing. We're seeing real efforts.
Higher wages. Higher wages. Bring them in. Companies with the.
Like, why aren't we? I mean, everyone should be thrilled about wages going up. They went up a little bit under Obama, but now they're.
I love it with wages.
Now,
you know what's so weird? Orthodox mainstream Washington economists. Higher wages are bad. They cause inflation. It's time to jack up interest rates. Nonsense. More people working and prospering and getting better paid.
This is what Trump promised.
This is what we need. Blue-collar workers are the leaders, the best wage gains. Here's a stat for you.
Okay, don't drown me in stats, because then people lose stats.
We got
hit back at some of the critics.
My friend Joe Biden said today, The middle class not participating. So get this. The lower 25% of the income earners, their wages up 4.5%. The upper 25, 3%. Now, they're both rising, but actually,
I love that.
It's the
okay,
bottom
take it
half
back. I love
that's
that
doing
stat.
The best.
All right, Larry, earlier today, CNN's Jake Tapper, your other friend,
yes,
said this about why the booming economy didn't lead his show tonight.
Mm. We were going to lead with the economy on the show. It was going to be the first block. We were going to sing the numbers that we just sang. And then President Trump decided to talk to Vladimir Putin and talk about how, Russia hoax and all that.
Mm. anyone's going to give them positive coverage.
But he should have lied with the economy. One last point. Wages, booming growth, productivity, more people employed, lower. No inflation. No inflation.
The experts predicted it. They're predicting recession right around the corner. Even Bloomberg headline is no recession in sight.
So if there's no inflation and a steady dollar, we will continue
to have... Why is the president hitting on the Fed all the time?
Very low inflation and very low interest rates. And so the Fed, you know, they're independent, blah, blah, blah. But they're looking at the low inflation numbers, too. Very surprising. We feel that may give them grounds later in the
year. Don't soften up on China, though. I don't want to hear any softening up on China. No softening on China. The China policy is working.
I know.
No softening up on China. That's what the Ingram Angle viewers are saying.
The negotiators meeting with Liu He this week from China are scared to death of you, so they're not going to back off on any China.
Fantastic. We didn't trade with the Soviet Union.
It's got to be a great deal. Let me just say, it's got to be a great deal with China. Must be enforceable.
We didn't trade with the Soviet Union. Why are we trading with China at all?
USMCA, okay, the old NAFTA 2.0, is a great deal for growth.
Answering my China question for growth. Soviet Union.
No, listen to me. There could be $100 billion of added GDP per year with 180,000 jobs per year. If we get through USMCA, Bob Lighthizer did a hell of a good job. See, this is another. People won't give Trump any credit.
He's not going to give him. The Joe's going to have to give him credit.
Everything's converging. This is a powerful prosperity wave because we changed all the incentives in the economy.
But their argument, Larry, is basically going to be Trump is not a good person. He tweets too much. He says asshole countries. They want people to ignore the fact that the economy is great and just focus on some of these other issues. So they're going to make it like a personality contest. That's what you see. Like Joe Biden's using the word dignity a lot. I think there's a lot of dignity in these numbers that you're citing tonight.
There's a lot of dignity. First of all, as somebody who is in and out of his office every day, I can tell you he is a good person. I want to say that. He is a good
person. He left a cushy life to do that, to get beat up every day.
He is a decisive, well-informed manager, executive, former businessman. So that's terrific stuff. But, looking ahead to the election, we have an opportunity to develop the biggest big tent economic coalition in history, probably reminiscent of Reagan in 1984. The tax cuts are working. The deregulation is working. The trade is working. The
income inequality. And they're all, as the Democrats are citing, income inequality, the cost of education, everything's expensive.
It's the blue-collar workers who are doing the best. Their employment is the fastest, and their wages going up is the fastest. I just want to sit down with my Democratic friends and kind of walk through these numbers because that's what the numbers
what's
are
their
saying.
Plan to raise the standard of living in most Americans?
Well, I'll tell you this. I don't know what their precise plan is. I haven't heard much. But for those Democrats who want to go the socialist direction, they could turn this powerful prosperity cycle into a major downturn. Poverty would win, not prosperity. And so that's one of the big themes here. No to socialism. Put it on trial and convict it because it's no good. Health care for all that stuff, the Green New Deal. It will wreck this prosperity. And let me say one thing.
All right.
President is the president of the entire economy. And it is precisely the entire economy which is improving. By the way, our Opportunity Zones plan is going to help. We'll go to every nook and cranny to bring prosperity to this
entire country. He's got to make the trips to Oakland, Chicago. Don't be deterred. Go into those cities and turn those cities around.
We're going to go. Absolutely. It's a great plan.
Larry, great to see you.
Thank you, Laura. Appreciate
it. Thanks for being here.
Prosperity.
Don't let up on China, because Biden's going to take us back to the TPP and offshoring all those jobs.
Best prosperity cycle in at least three decades.
All right.
That is major.
Great to see you, Larry.
Americans.